Ah, hello there, Wanderer. You must have traveled pretty far to make it here. You look tired, and it's cold out. Why don't you take a load off and sit by our fire? We were just about to begin telling tales of places far from here.
Of endless seas.
And ancient enemies.
Perhaps you've heard it before. Oh, it has been some time and how my memory fades, but sharing the stories we've experienced together brings them all flooding back.
The tale we share today is the story of eons long past, colliding with days yet to come.
Of ice simulacrum and wolves wearing skin.
Of long shattered echoes and newfound kin.
Of a portal to a world where cold freezes sun.
Stand sword at the ready, for the tale of Aurora has already begun. Must first set the scene. The natural order of things has long since been disrupted. The portal to a land called Lore was violently torn from its cycle, sending ripples throughout the endless sea. There, in a space between worlds, a maelstrom erupted, drastically shifting the tides of time and space that delicately held reality together. Centered around Earth, this interspatial chaos was similarly reflected in the chaos taking place in a land called Evermore, a hub of portals, ley lines, and powerful magic. In the wake of Lore's indefinite demise, financial ruin had befallen the town.
The townsfolk and visitors from other worlds all felt these effects. Some lost their homes, others their businesses. The acting troupe, who recently gained a new member in Philander Milsom, cousin of the murderous Maxwell Milsom, only had enough to eke out a meager existence by living in the catacombs. The pirates, who were gone for what seemed like a few weeks to everyone else, returned to Evermore after their own 7-year journey on the Endless Sea. They returned with a new crew in tow, members included but were not limited to Belladonna, a French illusionist, and Gazer, a navigator with a curious psionic ability and a psychic connection to their ship, the Last Shackle.
Hunger ran wild despite financial assistance from the recently arrived Grey Sisters. With little gold in their pockets, the people of Evermore found themselves scrounging for crumbs. But this was not the end of the chaos, for you see, time is a fickle thing, and so too is the very space around you. It is all too easy to twist, and under the right circumstances, tear. Have you ever had to worry about your very reality being taken from you in an instant, just to be shunted into a strange world? No? I assumed not. But this became the reality for the inhabitants of Evermore and all worlds scattered across the endless sea. Seemingly caused by the maelstrom, this phenomenon later called flickering led to many new faces arriving at Evermore that never expected to visit in the first place, an elf from the future, and many others. Not only did we have new faces, but some disappeared from Evermore's world as well.
With the town in turmoil and the portal cycle stability in question, the rift to our world opened ahead of schedule, long before it was anticipated. Fears that the portal to Aurora would never open were quickly assuaged as it appeared in the woods mere hours after our own. Almost immediately, Aurorans spilled forth, beginning with the Elves of Light, and their leaders, Ginli, a woman with the appearance of an Elder Elf of Light, and Gaffrick, a goat man. These Elves of Light bore the same joviality and charismatic kindness as those we had met before. However, they did not recall any of those elves we had met previously. And more impressively, these Elves of Light were warriors. You see, well over 1,000 years had passed in the land of Aurora.
Everyone we knew that returned there has long since passed on. And in that 1,000 years, much has happened. But the greatest priority to the Elves of Light upon arrival was finding shelter from their pursuers, the Wolves of Winter. Following closely after their prey, we soon saw them clad in the pelts of the animal from whence they claimed their name. Swiftly, they distanced themselves from the townsfolk, stalking the grounds above the burrows, naturally distrusting the town that gave refuge to their quarries. The wolves seldom spoke to anyone except for their own, speaking in their own tongue, and of course, using howls to communicate.
In the meantime, the leadership of the town of Evermore enacted a state of emergency. In an attempt to recover from dire straits, they began to sell off the land and its many properties to the highest bidder, while also forming their own bank to safeguard potential earnings. Leading the way, the acolytes of St. Michael purchased the unfinished church as their sanctuary. Many were wary of this cult-like group, and they were right to be. For when confronted by Sir Philip Humphrey, all were revealed to have dark pasts full of ritual cleansings by fire of those less faithful. Though the town avoided any conflict with them, as Jasper had warned that any action taken against them would only invite greater numbers to appear. The last thing Evermore needed were raving pyromaniac, religious fanatics rearing to set the town ablaze.
In the face of fear and famine, the Elves of Light proposed a solution. Simple, elegant, and full of carbohydrates. Pie. Under the direction of the secretive and withholding Ginley and Gaffrek, the Elves of Light would make pies infused with magic that would fill the bellies of any who ate them. Side effects once eaten included joy, elation, happiness, and an undying fealty to the Elves of Light with a burning desire to do anything and everything commanded by the pie providers. Oh, and lastly, smiles.
The town was unaware of these eventual side effects. Worldwalkers and townsfolk alike were shocked when they were witnessed firsthand. Some jumped at the opportunity to consume the pies. Others, like Jonathan Drake Kerrigan, an American Blackheart hunter, were wary of these enthralling pies. Frequently referred to as the pie-eyed, those under the effects of the pies were treated with trepidation. Joining forces with the wolves on a united front, the pie-shy townsfolk and the worldwalkers sought to find alternative means to sustain the town and combat the effects of the pie. Though, with little success. The wolves stood steadfast in their resolve to avoid the pies at all cost, but the pie-shy townsfolk, under the leadership of Drake, Ozymandias, and Commander Aran, slowly let members of their ranks leave in order to keep up appearances and to avoid an almost assured death by starvation.
Some townsfolk even chose new names to reflect their love for the enchanted snowberry pies. Vaella became Paella. Kaderin was all too willing to forsake his old name and become Pyderin. Odd shifts in nomenclature were not the end of these effects. The mental control soon manifested physically. Elven rangers developed sparkles that ran across their face, changing their appearance from fierce to laughable at best. Humans were also affected, frequently losing control of their bodies and behaving like toys, rigid, mindless. Those pie-eyed would occasionally lash out with pies, forcing them down the throats of those who had not yet consumed them. Kyra fell prey to one of these attacks.
The Wolves of Winter, with their allies, continued their resistance, leading movements to steal and sabotage delivery of snowberries, the Auroran fruits that were suspected to be the chief ingredient of the pies. When nearly all hope was lost in finding a way to stop the pie production and find alternative food sources, Commander Aran turned to Zodi, who, using dark magic, forsook his memories to create a gummy material that would provide nutrition and sustain those that ate it. He was not himself for some time after their creation. His happiness turned to darkness, his joy replaced with sorrow. Yet again, his sacrifices would keep the town safe a little longer.
Around this same time, Kyra flickered out of our reality. To where? No one knew. But her presence would be missed as her disappearance began a chain of events that would forever change Evermore. We call what happened next the Night of Pyndemonium.
Gathered together upon presumptions of peace and elation,
Elves of Light led the crowds in dances of cheer and jubilation.
Though this ruse would soon prove to be a source of madness incited.
For Ginley took high vantage and exclaimed, "Evermore, we are delighted."
As though rehearsed 1,000 times over, everyone who consumed the pies snapped to attention. Marching like toy soldiers, they made their way to find the Wolves of Winter. Ginley and Gaffrek explained to a shocked crowd that this was part of their plan for retaliating against a town that would harbor their pursuers and for not being strong enough. They lashed out, breaking the leg of one of the town's resistance leaders and town manager, Sykes.
Bloodshed seemed imminent, but was quickly abated as a blast from a horn torn through the air, breaking the magical enchantment over the minds of the pie-eyed town. Looking to the burrows, we saw a reassuring sight. The long-awaited chieftain of the Wolves of Winter, Ulfdrott, had finally arrived. His visage was remarkable and his presence commanding. Begrudgingly, he and the wolves promised to obey the order of the town, which meant not striking down Ginley and Gaffrick where they stood.
The two criminals had targets on their backs and were held for a time to await sentencing for their crimes, just as much as it was for their own protection. Meanwhile, the Elves of Light were revealed to have been under their control this whole time, freeing them of any charges that might have been placed upon them. Out of nowhere, a strange and presumed curse took effect in a few parts of town. Over time it changed, but it would cause all inhabitants of Evermore within its range to be silent, sing, or mimic the noises of animals from week to week.
The curse seemed to resolve on its own, but still, the town demanded for there to be someone to blame. A weapon of the fearful, blame was cast on a new trio of scholars referred to as the Tripaliaries, odd beings whose normal form would not be comprehensible to humans, and as such chose to incarnate themselves. Their ways were curious and rather alien to those who interacted with them. It was clear to anyone that spent time with them that they were rather harmless, at least to lesser life forms. We discovered that their entire existence revolved around the notion of investigate, understand, but do not interfere. Polar opposites to the meddling fates. It was their oddity that made them easy targets for human fear and pride.
In a desperate attempt to regain what had been lost over the past weeks of insanity, the Coven attempted to contact Kyra. Miri was able to reach her. She was heard, but could not be spoken to. She was in her ancestral homeland, the world of Aurora. Lost, injured, and alone.
Donovan created plans to save Zodi and restore him to his enlightened state. The process took much time and the efforts of many Worldwalkers, but he was eventually restored fully. Zodi's return provided much-needed hope for those who had lost so much.
Miri was busy, for contacting Kyra was not all she had to do. Ulfdrott, the wolf clan leader, and Ulfenia, the sword, they were partners, at least before Ulfdrott received his title. In Aurora, they had a son who had long since been lost, but if alive, would be the last remaining wolf in Aurora, the 13th wolf. As their last hope, Miri was hired to find him through divination, which she was able to do, though with only some success. She felt he was alive, but he was locked away in a prison of silk, silver, and ice. The vision was cryptic, but it was enough to restore hope to the two bereft parents. Ulfenia's tears will never be forgotten, for a wolf mother's tears are unlike any other. They do not cry for themselves, but they weep for the pack.
Badger, a husk of his former self, reached out for help, quite literally, by spelling out H-E-L-P in the snow, tediously marking it out with his feet while staring absently at Wen Weaver. It appeared that Jakul, though shattered throughout Badger and distant echoes, knew he could be restored if only he could get a message across. Wen spoke with him and became immediately frustrated with Badger's surface obstinance. She denied him aid, saying, "I have tried everything." Worldwalkers denied her claim, pointing out there was still much that has yet to be done for Badger. For Wen, restoring Badger to Jakul meant more than any Worldwalker could understand.
On the night of the new year, an anomalous flicker occurred yet again as Kyra returned, and she did so as a new woman, armed with knowledge of her past and clear sights for her future. While in Aurora, she discovered a map detailing the specifics of the many lands and regions therein. Though more importantly, she discovered a family tree, revealing that she was Queen Lila's sister, lost in time, centuries ago.
Furthermore, a connection was discovered between Kyra and Karej, a war speaker and diplomat of sorts for the Wolves of Winter. They had reason to believe they were tied together by the Fates somehow, as they both bore a necklace with the symbol of a sunburst, now a shared symbol of hope. The family tree shed further light upon this, as it was revealed that Karej was Queen Lila Kulbrin's son. It was a wolf of winter that was the lost king of Aurora.
It was for that reason that he denied any claim to royalty. As a wolf, he cast off his old bloodline and accepted his pack as his family and future. Kyra was, in that moment, by all rights, the inheritor of throne and queen of Aurora. Her sights became increasingly focused on safeguarding those lands, for she also knew of their current rulers, the Frost Lords, and they were coming.
A trial was held for Ginley and Gaffrick. Ginley's trial was delayed sentencing, but Gaffrick was immediately sentenced to death for his crimes in Evermore and Aurora. Handed off to the wolves by Ro, Ozymandias' deputy, the wolves carried out an execution, death by hunting party. Gaffrick's head was all of him that returned. A wolf pup, Theric, struck the killing blow and claimed Gaffrick's staff as his own.
On the same night of Gaffrick's death, the current rulers of Aurora, the Frost Lords, appeared. The four rulers came arrayed in the finest clothing. Silver silks and the whitest of ice were the hallmarks of their appearance. Beginning from the youngest, there was Bastion the Bastard. Not a bastard by birth, but by behavior. Were his life in Aurora to be called extravagant, wouldn't be scratching the surface. He ruled the lands to the south, the region called Calder Kinveta. His immediate elder sibling was Sylviana de Ciadel, an individual of exquisite taste. Sylviana could be considered a collector of the finest of everything. She ruled the lands to the east of Telvesia. The second oldest was Svanleifr de Ciadel. From his hands, only the finest of craftsmanship could be expected. What he could carve from ice would put the entire Renaissance to shame. He ruled the lands to the north, the lands of Frithvelia, which bordered the territory of the Wolves of Winter. And lastly, the oldest, Sora de Ciadel, the Sightless, blind but granted vision through divination. She served as a mouthpiece to Italessa, the Frost Queen, and their mother. Sora was given the region to the west to rule, the land of Winterschold.
They might have considered themselves benevolent rulers, but Kyra could not see them as anything but raving tyrants. To her great astonishment, the Frost Lords were allowed to stay in the town and were even given a kindly tour. Though it was on this tour that one Frost Lord would go missing. Upon exiting the catacombs, Svanleifr was not with his siblings. The three were disturbed. Peering back into the catacombs, his fate was clear. Someone had stabbed him in the chest with an arrow. No culprit was to be seen. It was this mystery that would dominate the town's minds for weeks. Though many did not trust the Frost Lords, they could all agree on one thing. They did not want the leaders of an entire world to become their enemies.
To everyone's astonishment, it seemed death was not to be given much credence among the Frost Lords. Svanleifr returned, in an identical yet fresh body. At this moment, it was revealed that Svanleifr, the craftsman, had built many bodies for his siblings to inhabit were they to meet an unfortunate end. It was Italessa that placed his soul in the new vessel. Svanleifr named Ginley as his murderer, and with no witnesses, the town could only believe him. With his return, the acting troupe decided to put on a show that was inspired by the tales from the Elves of Light called The Winterhex, to tell the tale of the Ice Witch of Blue Mountain.
In short, the small, revelatory play told the story of the finest puppeteer craftsman in all of Aurora, his beloved sister that lost her body, and the Ice Witch that would have made servants of them both. When the performance finished, the audience erupted in applause. However, the Frost Lords were not greatly pleased, with one exception. Sora was taken in by the show. She was smitten by the beauty of a life free from servitude. From her tone of voice and by the nature of the performance, what we saw, though changed from generation to generation, must have spoken to Sora at her very core, as we can now only assume that it bore some truth about the origin of the Frost Lords and how they became servants to their mother, Italessa.
It was now time for Ginley's trial. Four separate charges were levied against her, with murder as the most damning among them. Sephtis returned to town as the appointed judge for the event, given his training and executorial ability. Uriah, a local lawyer, was appointed as her defender. Sykes would serve as prosecutor, and was severely unprepared for his appointment. over the course of an hour and a half, the trial was resolved. All but murder had been cast out as a chargeable offense. Ginley was found not guilty on the only charge that remained. Ginley walked free.
Sykes looked utterly defeated upon seeing this play out in front of him. In fact, all of Evermore appeared broken by it. Uriah, however, looked content as a clam. That night begged a question. Who had the most enemies in Evermore? The person who enslaved the town, or the one who convinced a jury to let her walk free?
The wolves of winter were ever mindful of the obvious truth that they would soon need to return to Aurora. Their numbers small and needed to grow, they began trials to test all those willing to make the sacrifices necessary to join their ranks. Worldwalker and Evermorian alike participated. Over weeks of challenging trials, hundreds of participants were whittled down to a group of 34 who would claim new names and a place in the pack. I became Skylar the Iron Blade.
And I, Daniel the Earthshaker.
Over the course of the trials, both legalistic and Canaday in nature, there were major developments elsewhere. Miri was able to pinpoint a more certain location of the 13th Wolf, as Worldwalkers now knew that silver was a metal that hampers or outright blocks divination magic. Casting all silver away from the Coven Circle, Miri began to scry. Finding him, it was clear that he was locked away in a stronghold in the southern lands of Aurora, Bastion's lands. Sor was present for the divination and was obviously disturbed. A strange alliance was birthed from the information. Ulfdrot and Ophenia agreed that the Wolves of Winter would not slay Ginley outright if she would serve as their guide to the keep that held their child.
Oh, our sorrowful Sora. She was commanded by her mother not to speak to anyone until she found Bastion. Her eyes, full of fear and wet with tears, called to Worldwalkers to join with her in silent support. Upon encountering the bastard, her entire demeanor changed. It was clear this was no longer Sora in our midst, but Italessa. She shamed Bastion for his foolishness, and though not outright said, for not hiding the 13th Wolf well enough. After all, the first time Italessa ever chose to manifest herself in front of a crowd was in direct response to divining in Bastion's lands to find the lost son of Ulfdrot and Ulfenia.
Imelda was growing weaker as the cold of Aurora and the natural chill of Evermore sapped her strength. Restless, she fought to sleep, but was not capable of doing so without struggle. It was a sort of faesomnia. She developed great empathic powers, being able to touch someone and know exactly how they were feeling, taking upon her those emotions herself. She would carry those feelings with her for some time. But most interestingly of all, she discovered a journal belonging to Giordani. At first it was blank, but it soon began filling with words of its own accord. Giordani, though lost to us, was still clearly communicating to Imelda through this journal.
The contents of his letters were cryptic, occasionally outright indecipherable, but with help from those who knew him best, like his brother Zodi, we were given clues that Giordani was trying to aid Evermore in its current state while also looking out for its future. For example, his letter foretold the delayed, albeit early arrival of a frost giant that was seeking out its master, the Frost Lord, Sylveana.
Ollie, a member of the acting troupe, with the help of Drake Kerrigan, was revealed to be a pure-born shifter. Something more than just a common werewolf, Ollie was a descendant of the ancient Greek king Lycaon. His eyes changed colors into a piercing, unnatural yellow. His bloodline and abilities began to explain how he was able to cure himself of the Dark Blood Plague, and despite his best efforts, never experienced drunkenness. The wolf within him called for a pack and naturally drove him into the arms of the Wolves of Winter, which drove him further into the arms of Ophenia.
Though they were not the only lovers worth paying attention to, Jasper proposed to Kyra, offering to aid her in reclaiming her throne and to sit beside the queen until the end of his days. Though love lingered in the air the night of that proposal, not all were feeling the warmth of romance. Sora was seeking out silver to cast a spell to sever the connection between her and Italessa. With immense effort and great pains, Sora was free. With her connection erased, Sora was able to turn to Kyra and promise to pass the lands of Wintershold on to her with one condition. Kyra would have to return to Aurora and kill the frozen witch that once held Sora and her Frost Lord brethren captive.
Kyra, now a recently inducted Wolf of Winter, was confronted by Ulfthrott in Town Square. He spoke to her alpha to alpha, explaining that there can only be one, and it will be decided who will lead the pack. Then and there, Kyra fell to one knee and offered her sword to Ulfthrott as a peace offering. She explained that she does not want to be the alpha of the Ulfinventeri, the wolf's name for their own people. What she wants is to lead her lands to prosperity and unity, and that she has no desire to encroach upon the territory of the wolves, but that in her reign, she will ensure that they will never be disturbed and are well protected. Ulfthrott remained silent for a time. A few moments passed. He then lightly placed his hands on hers as they both held the blade, and then spoke. Ulfinventeri will serve you, Kyra, and you will serve Ulfinventeri. It is good. With that pact, the survival of the Ulfinventeri was safeguarded, and the reign of Queen Kyra Khozirin truly began.
No sooner after oaths were sworn that loyalties were thrown into question, Sora pled her case for allegiance and aid before Ulfthrott. Wary, and justly so, the packmaster of the Ulfinventeri questioned the doubtful Frost Lord. In confidence, she assured him that she wished purely for her mother's death. Aurora would be safer, stronger even, were she to be eliminated. Ulfthrott never had the chance to pass his final judgment on Sora. Svanleifr confronted Sora. He spoke sharply. He claimed that they needed their mother alive more than anything else. Ulfthrott interposed himself between the siblings, both protecting Sora and an alliance that would add thousands to the strength of the wolves. Nevertheless, he shamed Svanleifr and called him a suckling pup that needed to distance himself from mother.
The Frost Lord's pride was wounded. He had been attacked. In a moment of pure fury, Svanleifr struck out, clutching the throat of Ulfthrott. Using powerful hydromantic magic, he began a process that, if not stopped, would threaten to freeze the Wolf King from the inside out. Svanleifr fled immediately. When spoken to, he was inconsolable about his actions, referring to himself as a monster that had lost control. Words he spoke earlier that night still resonate with us. Conflict only leads to sorrow.
With no clear solution in sight, the town scrambled. One name hung on people's breath. Jakul Skara, the former general to King Eirik, then fractured in the form of Badger the Gravedigger, would have to be brought back to reality. Jakul himself had already given us hints about how to bring him back. Four words. Four people. Red. Light. Life. Dreams. Red for Wenweaver, a century's long love. Light for the magic of Faldo hosted in Imelda, queen of the fairies. Life for Kaderan, an age-old friend. And for dreams, Zodi. With memories and magical chants provided by Worldwalkers, the four ancients performed the ritual. Jakul was restored.
It was made clear that he was awaking from a deep sleep he had no intentions of prematurely ending. He came back, belligerent and resentful. It was unclear what Jakul would do next, or what in him called out for help in the first place. The town needed him now more than ever. Ulfthrott lay dying, choked by ice. Help was the last thing on Jakul's mind. The last time he used his magic, a maelstrom erupted around Earth. "You want my help?" he questioned. "There's always something else for you, isn't there?"
After a week's time, Ulfthrott was stable and on a road to full recovery from the magical attack. His health we owed to Wen and Dr. Rosalind Marsh, who overcame their differences. Magic and modern medicine came together and saved a life. This recovery alone would not be enough to exonerate Svanleifr of his crime, nor would a simple trial be enough to rend justice for his use of such offensive magics. The town felt a need to strike.
With support from both Bastion and Sora, the town began to mobilize. The Elves of Light dealt with the Frost Giant. Their magic was enough to end the bond between it and its master, Sylveana. All six guilds formed a unified front against Svanlafer and Sylveana, true servants of Italessa. Unwilling to forsake their evil mother, as the town lashed out in their final attempt to subdue the villains, Sylveana froze the town. Not with literal ice, but with something far more ancient. All townsfolk stood unmoving for the better part of an hour. Both, in turn, taunted the town for its stubbornness, and ultimately, its frailty. Sylveana taunted Jasper, giving him a kiss on the cheek and saying, "You could do so much better." Swiftly, they fled back through the portal to Aurora and were not seen again. Shielded by Imelda's abjuration, Jakul and Ginley unfroze Wenweaver, and through their combined efforts and the sacrifice of the majority of Jakul's power, the town was restored.
In moments, the town suffered the worst strike to its pride that it had seen in ages. With a move of her hand, a frozen princess was able to hold them all where they stood, only to be saved by someone who many had once considered the town drunk. Wenweaver, ground down by hit after hit, broke down, openly weeping in front of worldwalkers and townsfolk alike. She acknowledged her imperfections and addressed the weight she was under, though not without lashing out at the same time. Such is the nature of fire. Her fate was given over to the hands of worldwalkers, the fire within her clearly raging, her mind and ego consumed entirely by the passion of the moment. Perhaps it would be better for all if the untamed flame were given a chance to subside, as so often is the case in all of us. For if the passions rule reason, we surrender all control. We surrender ourselves.
Worldwalkers made no demands of Wen besides a plea for openness with Jakul. She would have to be the captain of her own fate. Shortly, the Aurora portal would close. It was time for townsfolk and Aurorans alike to wrap up any unfinished business. Ulfinia the Sword conquered the town's train, naming it Ulfin Ventrali.
In a whirlwind of emotions, Sykes and Violet were arrested. Sykes for unpaid debts, the entire economic crisis faced by Evermore, he put upon himself. Understanding the fatalistic outcome of his actions, he gave himself over to the law. Violet, however, was arrested on charges far more dubious. She was charged twofold. Firstly, for conspiracy against the town of Evermore.
Secondly, for the impersonation of someone long since passed. A certain Adam Miles, a man whose death her own father saw to, a man whose headstone sits in Evermore's own graveyard. Supposedly, she took on the pseudonym in order to buy up significant portions of the town, though her charges, unlike Sykes, felt entirely uncharacteristic. Her final plea was for someone to take care of her young sister, Dorothy. Viella would take position as standing mirror, with Lady Caitlin Gray at her side as standing deputy mayor.
Those planning to leave for Aurora were making their final preparations. Jasper, once a member of the Order of St. Michael, was sequestered away by his once brothers and sisters in the Acolytes. They wished to see him burned for his sins, as they do all the sinners. Nevertheless, Jasper, the ever-resourceful, made it away from his once family. The Acolytes, ever-apathetic, did nothing more but moan about the impending doom that awaits, for the flaming sword of St. Michael hangs above Evermore, bound to give swift judgment to all.
Information was revealed that Maxwell Milsom, actor, conman, and psychopathic murderer, had necromantic anchors scattered around the town. Through their power, Maxwell would inevitably bring himself back. Only three were said to be in Evermore, but with all material anchors found and in possession of the Coven, they would be able to control the return of the Necromancer on their own terms. For if the Coven did not do this, Maxwell would rise as Revenant, a powerful being of undeath.
The Coven seemed confident in their ability to contain him, though who knew what would await them? Maxwell was nothing if not cunning in life. What greater plans could he have orchestrated around the thing that must have intrigued him most, his very own death? Few were as worried about his return as Ozymandias, the chief inspector had spent much time investigating the gruesome scenes of Maxwell's murders, so it shocked the town to its very core when it was revealed that he had played a hand in orchestrating the Maxwell murders, including painting targets on some of his earliest victims.
Meanwhile, battle plans were set out in Vander's Keep by the Ulfenventeri and the Frost Lords. They would rely on guerrilla tactics upon arrival, moving quickly to the lands of the Fallen Bears of Winter to utilize their many traps and pitfalls against the army that certainly awaited them. Should they survive the initial assault, they would make their way to Winterschuld, put Kyra on a new throne, and begin recruiting conscripts from Sora's Island and Bastion's Kingdom to the south. Their forces united would fight for the new kingdom.
And then it was time for the portal to shut. Ulfdrot gave his final words, declaring that Evermore would always have the protection of the Wolves of Winter as long as there is an Ulfdrot. A handful of Worldwalkers, invited by Queen Kyra herself, were invited to leave through the portal back to Aurora. Teary farewells were had by all. Shakul too would return to Aurora. With 1,000 years past, he would return to a land where all he had once loved had passed away. What future was in store for Aurora and our new friends? Nothing was certain. But surely as the sun rises, the cycle would continue, and we would see Aurora once more.
The Fate of Friends in Frozen Lands.
A town of hopefuls in new hands.
Unearthed evil and darkest plots contended.
Here our story must be ended.
We hope you enjoyed our Aurora 2019 story recap. We put in a lot of hard work to make this high-quality episode. Those of you thoroughly acquainted with the story were probably aware that we weren't able to cover every little detail of the season. Believe us, we are aware of everything we couldn't fit in here.
Aurora 2019 has been the most story-rich season to date, making this the hardest recap we've ever attempted. We had to make some hard decisions about what to keep and what to cut.
We believe that with everything we've covered today, you'll have everything you'll need to move confidently into future seasons. Be sure to brush up next Aurora season. You'll never know what will come back to haunt us.
So again, thank you for taking time to listen to our episode. We're proud of it. And you know what? We're proud of you!
Please go ahead and follow Evermore Park for the past, present, and future developments at Evermore.com and at Evermore Park and at Evermore Creative Studio on Instagram.
We'd love to connect with you, so please follow us on social media at World Talkers on whatever platform you use.
Call in at 801-332-9321 and leave us a message. We'd love to be able to respond to you live on our show.
Or write into us at worldtalkers.podcast@gmail.com. We want to talk to you.
Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
Or wherever you listen to us. Every review helps.
If you like what we do, please head over to patreon.com/worldtalkers. We're offering some amazing content in addition to what we're doing here for as low as $1 a month.
So again, thank you so much for listening.
The portal to Aurora may have closed, but there's still so much that awaits you.
Beyond the Portal.